Welcome to Anything But a One, Adventures in Miniature Wargaming. Here are your hosts, Tom Castaños, Richard Martinez, and Ray Winstead. Take it away, guys.
Hello and welcome back to Anything But a One, Adventures in Historical Miniature Wargaming. As the lovely and talented Chantel said, it's myself, Tom Castaños, Richard Martinez, and Ray Winstead. You can find us on all the major podcast apps, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Apple iTunes, Stitcher, you name it. You can certainly find us on Facebook. We would love to be interacting with you folks. Drop us a line. Tell us what you think, as long as it's nice. No. Tell us what you think. Give us ideas for things. We're going to start putting up some polls. We always post some stupid memes and things like that. Facebook, Anything But a One, Adventures in Wargaming. Certainly our webpage, where you can find all of the episodes, anything but a one, all spelled out, .buzzsprout.com. Not only can you find all the episodes there, if you're really inspired, there's a little button in the top right-hand corner where you can buy us a beer. You can help financially support the podcast for as little as $2, and it's not like recurring. It's just like a $2, drop us $2, like a tip jar, and that helps go toward the cost of hosting and things like that. So our topic today, gentlemen, is the aesthetics of the game table. So we've previously talked about like what miniatures we like and things like that, but now this is the final product. This is the reason we do this. You belly up to the 4x6 table, and you've worked for weeks and weeks and weeks and months and months and months painting and putting together. So what makes or breaks a game as far as the look? Ray?
I've said all along, I like games that play out the way the books that I read, the image that I get from books.
Okay.
And I think aesthetics are in a very important part of that.
Yeah.
You know, we make a lot of jokes about my painting. I do paint my miniatures. I rarely pay with unpainted miniatures.
True.
I'm not as prolific as Tom, who cranks out 8 battalions an evening just because he's bored.
I have no life.
but yeah, I do spend a good deal of time researching and painting miniatures. I love building terrain.
Yeah.
Because... you know, nothing really appeals to me like a really nice setup table with some finely painted miniatures. I mean, the look, it's why I play with miniatures instead of
and not a board game. Right. Yeah. And you
so
are.
To me, it is extremely important. Aesthetics are very important.
And for all the grief I give you about painting your miniatures, there's no question, hands down, between the three of us, you're the modeler. You're the one that can build stuff and make, I mean, well, your terrain has been outstanding. And...
yes, and I do rather fancy myself more of a modeler than a painter. I'm the guy who spends 8 months scratch building a figure, cobbling it together out of everything, and then I spend the next 12 months looking at it on my shelf going, you know, when I get that guy painted,
he's going to be great. Really, yeah, he's going to be awesome. Aesthetics, Richard, what does that mean to you when it comes to the game table?
They're preferred when it can be managed, but I will say here, I'm almost the diametrically opposite of what Ray said. They're a nice element, but for me, the most important aspect is the playing experience and being able to get together and the camaraderie that we have and share around the game table. I have no hesitancies playing with unpainted miniatures. You shove a couple of books under the tablecloth and that's a hill.
Yeah.
I got no problem with that. Yeah. You know, again, when push comes to shove. Now, if you've got a nice, you know, handcrafted... I paid $500 on eBay for this piece of miniature. Throw it on the table. I got no problem with it. My game experience and enjoyment of the game does not hinge upon that.
I can agree with that. I mean, a good game is going to be a good game, but certainly I think it's dramatically enhanced
It does enhance. Now, I would even say it. So it does enhance the experience. But I think what is of greater experience is, you know, when you line those dice up and you roll that, you know, six ones when you thought you had the for sure thing, and you're throwing your dice down and, you know, cussing the storm out. That's what I find more fun about that, and then teasing you about it.
Yeah.
But again, preferred when it can be done. But, you know, to me, I just want to be able to game. I used to be, believe it or not, back in the day, of that kind of perspective that no miniature that's painted, you know, unpainted, shall not see the table. And then I realized if I followed that rule, I wouldn't play any freaking games.
You've never played a game.
So now, I'd rather play the game.
Now, in fairness, you're OCD. When you painted miniatures, they were gorgeous. I mean, they were spot on because you, like, redid them three times. Oh, I got a little bit out of the white. I am not that way. So, you know, we've made a lot of jokes about it, but I'm the one that does paint here, and I paint a lot. But I'm not offended by somebody that doesn't paint their man.
I'm not either.
Yeah.
We make a big deal out of it. But if you show up with an unpainted army, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I've read people's comments on Facebook. So, you know, I went through the trouble to paint mine. You could at least put a base coat. And I guess I get that, but I've never felt that way because, look, we don't know what station in life all these different people are in. I mean, you know, great. You got, you know, three kids under the age of 9. You ain't painting miniatures, right? If you are, you're probably a very neglectful parent, you know? We've gotten to an age where it's all
how you pose that question. That person who thinks that way, it's like, well, I guess you would prefer not to play at all then?
Right, exactly.
If the choice is don't play at all, or you get to play a game and, you know, oh, the unseemly sight of naked miniatures.
Oh, yeah.
What do you prefer?
I remember reading about, like, a game club in England where they, like, rated your miniatures, and that was the rating your troops were by, like, how, like, a minimum of, you know, the three color shading, they could be elite, but if you only got the base coat on, the best they could be were regulars, and if they were underpainted, they were only militia. That would piss me off because, you know, not everybody's an artist, not everybody's going to take the time to do that, you know.
You know, Richard brought up something about back in the day he used to only pay with painted miniatures, and he was very OCD about that. But I think it's also interesting, maybe a bit ironic, that back in those days, I was the one that generally played with very large armies of primer miniatures. It was those days that made me decide once and for all, you know, if I don't start sitting down and forcing myself to paint these miniatures, all I'm ever going to have are universally gray armies.
That's right. They're all Scots Covenanters.
Yeah. So that Austrian was Yangers. Where my rule of making sure I only play with painted miniatures
came
from.
So we kind of like flip sides then.
Yes. I flip sides because of that, because I remember a British army that stayed gray their entire career.
Scots Greys.
And my Austrian army was pretty much white primer.
I was going to say
a handful of battalions ever got actual facings or faces.
So you know, and I say that Ray is definitely our model builder, but back in the day when my brother played with us, he was a model builder too, and he coupled Ray's model building skills with my speed of painting. So if he said we're going to Gettysburg like tomorrow night, he'd have the seminary built and like everything else and a pretty solid standard. And really, he's the one that got us all started playing games with the old Rally Round the Flag Civil War game, which we never played even close to the rules. And it was played with Airfix 72nd scale miniatures
which we forgot to mention in our episode on miniatures.
Yeah, they definitely have to get an honorable mention because I'm sure more people started miniature gaming because of boxes of Airfix figures than just about anything else.
I had a very large American Civil War army, and it was entirely Airfix.
And my brother countered that with his Confederates, and we played with y'all's miniatures, and Michael would create these amazing tabletops with lots of like old railroad model houses and picket fences and hedges and rivers and bridges. Nothing was ever wanting. on those tables. And I think in the early years of playing, that really inspired me that it looked it so great to be a part of that. Now, I personally haven't followed through with that. You know, I've got some nice scenery, and I've got a lot of times that we've put a piece of cardboard down and said, that's the village, or a piece of cardboard, that's the bridge, or whatever. You know, and you're right, yeah. Rich, it the index totally card. Works. And another common theme that runs through our podcast all the time is how little time, how seldom we get together. Right. So, yeah, I'm not going to bitch about the unpainted barn the one time every 3 months we get to play a game, right? It's like, that's it. I can't be bothered with this. I'm going back to my home more now. That's right.
Exactly. Yeah. I would much rather play a game with somebody with an unpainted army than just sit there at the table by myself and admire my miniatures.
Okay. One thing that I did that I have trouble with now is back in the day when we did these oceans of 15 millimeter figures, I never flocked the bases. I painted them green, that gave them this very toy soldier look, and it was very uniform. I used cardstock, what I could afford at the time. And I've still got all those Napoleonics, but now when I play with them, I kind of go, brr. I wish they had flocking on them, but as paper bases, you really can't go back in and throw white glue on them without the bases all kind of whirling up and things like that. So that's kind of what I've got right now when it comes to these guys, and it bugs me. And there's no way I could play with a 28 millimeter base of painted figures without flocking on the base. That would look dumb.
I remember back in the early days, I didn't flock any of my bases because my rationale was it looked really stupid with them carrying their own little piece of turf around with them.
And I'm still that way a little bit about making the bases too much too like elaborate. Little dioramas with the little well next to them. It's like, yes, they carry their well. Now I've got a country well in the middle of Arnhem, you know, like on a street. You know, it kind of is a little weird, but getting pretty particular.
The modeler in me wants to go that elaborate on every little base. And after I do it, I kind of look at it and go, yeah, it really looks kind of out of place.
Are you really going to reflock your bases in snow to play the Battle of the Bulge scenario?
Exactly. I've learned to kind of restrain myself and not go overboard with the basing.
Hell, as I recall, I have American gun crews playing in the desert with mittens on.
They're Battle of the Bulge.
So. No one noticed it.
It's cold in the desert at night. That's right. And you know
they have
what?
A condition.
Yeah. And in 15 millimeter, you could literally repaint those hands just flesh colored, even with the mitten. Nobody would. Because by the way, some of the old manufacturers, going back to talk about minifigs, it was a mitten anyway. It didn't have any finger detail, you know.
So a question for you guys. How much do counters bother you on the table? I'm going to assume, Richard, they don't bother you since aesthetics is not really super high on your list.
Counters is kind of a different, for me at least, a different game, because if the counters are there to portray organizational statistics for the unit that are going to impact the game, and if they become so cluttered that I can't keep track of what the unit is or what's happening with it, that can be bothersome for me. So if it's going to bring confusion in the game, again, I'm not confused because, you know, my camouflage gray guys, I can't find them on the battle board. But if I forget that they're disordered on top of, you know, routing and some other counter that had some other indicator, and I've got to spend time looking through all that, that does kind of bother me. It slows the game down. An unpainted miniature doesn't slow a game down.
Command decision.
Yeah.
The little stack of counters for the low on ammunition, low on fuel, morale down. I've got like 9 counters behind every little tiny tank.
Right.
And all you do is like bump
them. I got 9 fatigue markers. I got to count them all up. Like, how many fatigue are in there? Like, oh my God.
That was exactly the game I was about to bring up because we followed their suggestion in the rules and used coins.
Yeah.
Because I just had the freestanding rule book. Right. I didn't buy the elaborate box set. And I remember, you know, halfway through a game, you know, you had little GHQ model tanks, micro armor tanks with like $12.85 following them around the table.
Right.
You know, trying to keep track.
I thought we were gambling. If I beat your, if I blow up your tank, I get all the change.
You know, after a while, I had to go to the bank and, you know, pull some money out and convert it into change because I didn't have enough to, you know, keep track of what was going on with my army.
There is definitely a fine balance because I know, like, in a lot of the games we play now with Thomas's organizational counters, and I'm thinking specifically like a Fire and Fury or an Age of Eagles, it's nice to see, oh, that's the disordered marker, as opposed to before we had those kind of markers, we'd put like a colored die. And then, of course, you forget what the die was. Oh, he was really disordered, or he was really out of ammunition.
Or you accidentally grabbed that die and rolled it.
Right, and then you're like, wasn't he disordered? Yeah. And so those kind of counters help with gameplay.
So I heard a different thing about the command decision, though. For you, it was less about the look of it and more about the functionality of the little stack of things. You're talking more about you just hated the look of the little, a little both.
Yeah, a lot of both. But the look definitely was a big part of it. You know, the little pile of counters following the tank was bigger than the tank.
Yeah,
especially after a while, it just really overshadowed the miniatures. Pretty soon, it was just these clumps of counters all over the place.
The great banking war.
You know, and it even happened during games. If we played games that were of a fairly large size, at the end of the game, you know, we'd be cleaning up and we'd find this clump of counters setting off the one with no vehicle.
Yeah.
And so you're wondering who moved away and left their status behind, you know, and it's.
Yeah. You know, so you're right. You know, Rich talked about the Age of Eagles, the Fire and Fury markers, and it was Stone Mountain that produced a set of markers specifically for Fire and Fury. It had the little breakthrough guy charging and the broken cannon for the disabled or whatever.
And for me, that was brilliant. Because finally, I had markers that didn't really detract from the game.
Right, right.
They just sort of blended in with it. If you looked at them up close, they probably looked out of place in some. But playing a game, you don't look at it.
No. Well, and that takes me to the next step that we've done with our Black Powder Pike and Shot Hail Caesar games. Is you know, Ray and I have gone to the little discs where you can actually dial up the different number and glue in a little wounded soldier to the top of it. Those are beautiful. But I want to give a ton of credit to a YouTube channel now, and you know, that's another episode one of these days I want to do about inspiring YouTube channels. A guy named Seventh Son has a fantastic YouTube channel, and he plays Black Powder for Napoleonic. He plays Hail Caesar. And I noticed the same little dials that you and I use, but it didn't have a little dead guy on it. And at first that bugged me, but it was scenic and had like little flowers on it. Then I realized he's genius. He uses the same ones. You know, he's got a little bucket of little dials. And just because, and now I've got the same amount of dials, but I can only use a third of them because I feel stupid putting a Roman legionary behind my Austrian grenadiers. But if there was a little dude on it, right, if it just had a pile of rocks and flowers and a number, it would blend in with the table and be useful. Thank you, because Seventh Son.
We always run out of those counters.
Yeah, because because y'all don't paint. But that's but yeah, and I know in a perfect world it looks neat seeing the little injured guy and all of that there, but as opposed to a poker chip or a dice, it's still an ultimately better
huge advantage. And you know, Litco makes a variety of different counters that can be applied to different games. And those are a huge improvement over the coins like we used to use.
Yeah, or
but
dice.
But I think even then, they look okay on the table, but there's still, there's a point where even those begin to clutter up the table. You get too many different colors that are out of place. You get too many different kinds of markers. And really, the point of a miniatures game and setting up all the terrain
look like a
is you get the visual of it. And there is a point where you get enough markers on the table and it really starts to detract from that.
Mm-hmm. But the other side of it are those games, those old school games where you had rosters and you wrote, yes, like you had a track, you know, oh, that one's down this much morale. No counter on the table. I mean, just your miniatures, but right, a roster. You, I don't think anybody really wants to. I mean, maybe there are a lot of people that still do that. I don't know.
I don't know that I would go back. I'll tolerate a reasonable number of markers on the table. I think Battlefront did a pretty good job. Their markers still look like markers.
Yeah.
But I think they've kind of tailored them enough to the different forces that they don't look horribly out of place.
Rule writers have helped. Because, Rich, when you're playing Empire, how did you mark casualties?
Going back to the old trusty casualty cap.
Yeah.
Oh, little, man, that brings back some memories.
Yeah, those little safety heads for the,
yeah,
for the screws, and you just plonk it on the guy's hat.
Cap is.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
And if, yeah, so, you know, if you had a big game going and you've got these, you know, magnificently painted miniatures and some of them are wearing these big marshmallow head things, which are casualties, you know, most rules don't subtract casualties like that. You either take a whole stand or you're tracking their stamina like most of the Warlord games or whatever. And that probably did a lot to help clean up a tabletop too.
It does.
You know?
And I can't remember which game it was, but towards the end of those games, I remember they started coming up with different ways of trying to utilize those caps because certain cap colors meant a certain status in the thing.
Yeah.
So you'd have a base with like two or three white ones, and then their status would change. You'd have to pull off all the little white ones, put little yellow ones on them. And
yep. But Buck Sidru, he wrote a couple of games. Maybe he still does. I haven't seen anything he's written lately. But one that he wrote that we played at one of the earliest Millennium Cons was a thing called Beer and Pretzel Skirmish, BAPS, which was a World War II skirmish game. And he was using 20-millimeter miniatures at the time. And they were all on metal washer bases. And then with every level of fatigue you took, he had another little magnetic washer that went under that base, like red, you know, I don't know if it was like black, or I forget what, it got progressively worse. But if you were at your full extent, your character gained 50% height right, with all these little metal washers.
Was standing 12 feet above everybody else on the table.
No, it had the advantage.
He was looking over the Tiger tank.
It had the advantage that they were magnetic, that it went with him. So there was a value there, but that was kind of an odd mechanism for that. But, you know, again, new ideas. You've got to give people credit for trying.
Yep. Yeah, I really like the state where things are now, using miniatures to represent status,
yeah,
kind of like
as
Warlord
much as you can, yeah,
has started. Yeah, using the dials to measure, keep track of things. That really appeals to me because it doesn't destroy the aesthetic that I work so hard
when, and it also helps when you're playing a game system that lends itself to multiple periods. So you mentioned, yes, these fatigue markers that go very well with the Warlord games, and you can play Napoleonics, you can play, yep, Ancients, you can play Civil War, you know. So you're using it for various lines. Things we talked about in the past, except for the, you know, the Mighty Casualty Cap.
Yeah.
you had different types of counters for each of those game systems. So you were forced to use a different set for a lot of the different game rules you were using.
Well, here's another facet of all of this.
Mm-hmm.
How does unit sizes affect your perception of a game and the aesthetic?
Ooh.
And the example that I have is I love Age of Eagles.
Mm-hmm.
I probably one of my favorite games.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the complaints that I hear about it from people who don't like the game is that six little bases does not look like a brigade. They just can't play it because that's not a brigade.
So it'd be the same problem with Fire and Fury,
they want,
too.
They or want Napoleon's those battles. That,
yeah.
Yeah, they want that Empire look with the columns of battalions.
Mm.
And to them, that's what it takes to make the game feel right.
I think that would speak to the game scale. You know, Battles for Empire is a game that's trying to portray multiple core. I mean, don't get me wrong. People tried to play Empire that way, too, multiple core and doing whole wings. And that lends itself to a topic we discussed in one of our very first podcasts about game scale and rule system. But for someone who wants to see that, and I would say there's nothing wrong with wanting that, you're looking for a different scale of game than Age of Eagles is saying.
But how do you feel about it? Can you play a Napoleonic battalion where the battalion is represented by five guys?
Oh, I see what you're saying. When you're talking about if you're having to define it as a unit and you say it only has five counters on it, it might take some getting used to. I know I have some preconceived ideas of what I think those unit sizes should be. And so here goes an example. We discussed this earlier with a game system we used to play called Le Petit Empereur, some little Ziploc bag game we had purchased. And it had like basically a stand that you would use for Napoleon's battle. And you called it like an infantry corps, maybe like two stands, and you called it a whole corps.
Yeah, like each stand was a division.
Right. And so that never quite felt right to me.
That felt like a board game.
Right. So I think there is something to be said for that there needs to be enough mass in the units to represent the kind of scale you're looking at. I don't think five guys is what I would think of, or five castings as a battalion or a brigade. But it would really be more about what other mechanics are involved. I will admit the miniatures would give me some pause in trying to accept that as a battalion or a brigade.
Yeah, so one of the things that, and I know where Ray's kind of going with this, in Warlord particularly, was it the Hail Britannia? Which book was it that came up with the
Britannia?
Yeah, so in the Hail Caesar line, one of the books suggested, you know, and the standard Warlord figure unit is 24 figures, and that's the stand. Remember, yes. They don't care about how many figures, but it's the frontage equals like 200 millimeter, whatever it was, and it roughly works out to about 24 figures. But this guy said, there's no reason you can't play with 12, as long as everybody's playing with the same thing, these half-sized units. And Ray and I did that with our ancients, our Romans and our Celts, and I think it looks great. And it's happening.
It looks awesome.
And you get twice as many units for the same number of castings. And there's a ton of advantages to it. But where I'll take that is, I don't think it works with all of them.
You're right.
I couldn't possibly imagine my Austrian battalion being 12 guys. It doesn't look right unless it's 40. I mean,
everyone else's.
Right, yeah. It's got, and by the way, double everybody else's. So your unit's 10 and my unit's 20. I still don't think I'd have the feel for it that you do. So a lot of it depends on the time period, and maybe you're, and something else we talked about in our very first podcast, maybe I don't know as much about Roman warfare, so I'm perfectly okay with this quasi-representation of the cohort versus my intimate knowledge of how to lose with an Austrian army. I need all the options of battalions and column that need all the pieces to make those things work.
I did want to second that. I think you bring a very good point up. I think it's great to know the background about the time period you're trying to play. I do agree, though, that there will be times when you let that knowledge get in the way of the fun of the game.
Yep. That is true. Back to the point that we're not going to play because I don't have enough of them painted. Right. Well, why didn't we just play half-size units and knock the game out, right?
Exactly. And I think that's one of the things about wargaming that I think all three of us here have learned over the years is that it's always a compromise. There, as much as you want it to be a certain way, you've got to learn that there's got to be a compromise somewhere in order to get the game to work.
The tabletop is that way. You know, I see these pictures on Facebook of these diorama tabletops, and they're so beautiful. And I look at them, I go, that's not playable. You know, and we've talked before about like the cheesy styrofoam stacked hill, but you knew right what level your troops were on the stack, level one, level two, for a game that matters in. Or they stayed on it. They didn't go sliding down the hill from the, you know. So sometimes the aesthetic has to take a back seat to the function of making the game work. I mean, you want to have this, what are those commercials with the auto insurance, and Peyton Manning has like Peytonville built that whole little town. You'd love your game table to look like that, but it's not functional at all.
Well, one of the things that, I'm looking at now, we're just now really kind of getting started toying with Team Yankee.
Yeah.
So we've got some teething things going on with it.
Well, that's one way to go. But call it.
Yeah, some discussions going on.
Yes, discussions.
But I'm now looking at terrain and trying to put together some 1980s looking terrain.
Right.
And you know, Battlefront stuff is kind of hard to get sometimes.
And pricey.
And very pricey. So I'm looking at model railroad stuff.
Mm.
And, you know, there's all these really nice looking buildings that I can find. Some of them are maybe a little more Americanized than I'd like. But yeah. Then I could make them work.
Yeah.
But the problem is some of these buildings are meant to be, you know, more modernish high rises. And I'm, you know, as appealing as it is, I want to put these things together. And I'm thinking, man, I could really make a nice looking table out of this. But then we're looking at these canyons that are like 2-3 feet deep.
Right.
Because of the buildings all around it. And now I'm asking myself, how do I get in there to move these troops around? And
right.
At that point, you're starting to realize.
Can't.
Fighting a battle in downtown Moscow maybe is not going to either. That or we're going to have to reimagine downtown Moscow.
So let's finish off with a bang and a fist fight here. While we're on the Team Yankee category, there's a couple of things at play. Number one, you know, and look, again, you make exceptions. You have to make qualifications for a game. The scale of the ranges of weapons, these modern weapons, I mean, you know, these tanks are capable of shooting 2-3 kilometers away. But we're playing on a 4x6 table.
Yes.
So you're instantly in range.
Yes.
And Ray and I have
even with the abstracted scales, you're almost in range. Yeah.
And if you got a table size where you weren't, it wouldn't be a functional table you couldn't reach across. So there's that side of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then Ray and I both have this aesthetic tick that as we watch lots of YouTube videos about Team Yankee play, we immediately text each other, "Oh my God, did you see the parking lot on that table?" You know, a block of Soviet tanks that are rubbing fender to fender, four deep, like they're going to spell out the college name that they went to when they're done. And it just drives us both insane. But Richard brought up a great point about it when it came to the rules. What was your point, Richard?
I know after looking at some of those videos and reading over the rules and going over the stats, I came to that conclusion that for there to be some kind of parity for the Warsaw Pact forces to kind of engage the NATO, they needed to stick close together to make the ranges work and the rate of fires balance out. And with terrain blocking, it's just difficult to bring your mass into bear, and you need to bring more tanks to bear to balance out the firepower, the rate of fire, excuse me, of the other tanks. And so for me, it didn't bother me as much. That part was not a deal breaker for me.
And in all fairness, Tom is somewhere in between Richard's argument and mine. I am the one who is just sitting here looking at this appalled to my socks, going, no. We cannot be doing this hubcap thing. I didn't paint all these. I'm not painting all these miniatures to play another Napoleonic game. And it just looks way too Napoleonic to me.
Yeah.
With these little regimented ranks.
Yeah.
And
I can definitely see that.
It doesn't feel right. I will say
this though, and I know we've played game systems more recently that allow for this flexibility and the idea that you don't like the rule, change the rule.
Yeah, everything by
we've
Warlord.
Been right. You don't like the rule, just that's Warlord, right? You don't like it, take it out.
It's printed in, and they can the rules
exactly.
It's like the first rule. If you don't like this, change.
And I'm not embarrassed to say we've lived that rule many years in the past.
Yeah.
And I will say that when we've tried to change and impose what our idea of the right rule should be, mm-hmm. it has not ended well in most of our game systems in the past. What comes to mind? Guard Decor Ooh. And Battle Through Empire, and we just making every flipping rating we wanted for units. And we always had a reason for doing it.
Yeah.
Didn't work out well. Didn't come out well.
But we have to keep always broke the
game. We always broke the game.
I will say this. Like every bad sci-fi movie where they decide to introduce a new species into the planet, it doesn't end well. Everything is interconnected.
Right.
So you change a thing and you screw up two other things. Correct. That is true. There's no question about that.
Yeah. And guys, this is still an ongoing thing with us.
Oh,
yeah. We're still working it out.
And the discussions are still ongoing on how we're going to approach this. Law of unintended consequences may swing things over to Richard's side, but I'm not surrendering yet.
I
just
expect
feel like there has to be some
other option.
Compromise between stacking tanks like Lego blocks and going to ultimate realism of only having three tanks on the table.
On a 4x6 table.
Yeah.
And that's what I said. You know, and again, I'm
looking for a compromise.
I'm 100% with you. I despise the way those look. Every time I watch one of those videos, I just grit my teeth when I see the little block of tanks rolling around. But a couple of things at play. The rules, in my opinion, have created that.
Yes.
Because of the way the army lists are built.
Right. There are some definite command and control rules are at the very
just the fact that Russian tanks are a point apiece. I mean, you're going to make a ton of them, you know?
That's true.
But then because we've only just started the game, we don't have a ton of miniatures for the game. We played a very small
experience.
Or experience, but really more than anything, because we have so few miniatures, we played such small point games that it didn't come into play in our games. And we're playing 40, 50 points, which I would say, and I know Battlefront doesn't want to hear this because they're not going to sell as many miniatures. Probably about the right size point value for a 4x6 table.
And Tom, and I definitely agree on that.
But it does limit it. You don't get to have all the fun extra thingy doodles to play with that. Or if you do, you're going to have one of them, you know, kind of thing.
Right.
But yeah, I'm really caught in the middle. I despise how it looks, but I do see Richard's point because having played the Soviets and having accepted what you deal with that army, it's definitely one of the functions that makes it playable for the Soviet player. It's bunching everything together, but just blech.
And I definitely see his point. There are points to be made there.
Yeah.
I think that anything we do come up with, if we make any changes, are definitely gonna have to have his input into it.
Yeah.
So it's gonna have to be what he and I can work out with that will have the desired result without just placing a bunch of nerfs on the Soviet army, which is obviously designed to play as a horde army.
Yeah, it is definitely. So here's the question. This brings it full circle to the topic. If I know we don't really play outside of our group much, but like, say, for example, we don't find another solution and we continue with it the way it is, and Rich rolls out with his block of tanks. Does that ruin Team Yankee for you? Does that aesthetic detract so much from the game you don't want to play the game anymore?
I don't think it will go that far. It will take it down. Right now, it's kind of my favorite rules to play with because I really like modern warfare. Just something that's always been an interest. I think it will bring it down a notch from that level. It'll probably become a game that I enjoy playing once in a while.
Mm-hmm. So here's another follow-up question to that too. Let's say we do adopt some sort of conformity rule that says, you know, you can't do some limitation rule that says that you couldn't do that. Like Tom said, a lot of times we don't play outside our group, but let's say an opportunity came up to play that game in a larger venue. What decision at that point do you make? Do you avoid other games with that game system because you have this house rule that no one else may follow? and pass up opportunities to play with others.
He avoids playing with other people. Easy choice.
He can play with himself.
Yeah,
well, very much so.
Oh, that's another podcast.
Yes, I am not a tournament gamer by any stretch of the imagination.
Pick up game at the store with another group.
I know, but I'm just pointing out. I'm the anti-tournament guy here. And there's some long stories behind how we got to that.
That's another podcast.
That's probably a podcast all unto itself. would I avoid it? I can't answer that right now because I don't have enough experience playing the game at this point to really know.
Okay.
Just like I was throwing all these ideas at Tom the other day, but I pointed out to him, I'm just thinking out loud. I'm not ready to just start changing rules yet.
Sure.
I'm still at that point where we need to play it more and get a pretty good feel of exactly what dynamics are actually going on in the game.
But fair,
and I'm not there yet.
Fair answer. But a question for Tom too as well. If we impose some sort of house rule, how does that impact your approach with that game system, with other people that are not in our close-knit group that follow the house rule?
I'm willing to play with whatever people play with. I would gnash my teeth at watching them stack their tanks up, but if that's the game, that they play the game verbatim out of the book, I'll play the game verbatim out of the book. It is still more about playing the game than anything else, but for me personally, it does kind of irritate me to see the bat reps, the videos, like a brrr, just kind of really,
yeah,
it's like a picture hanging crooked on the wall. It just kind of.
If I go to a game store or if I'm at a convention and I decide to play the game at the table that's there, I'm willingly going to play by the rules that are at that table. I'm not going to try to bring my own house rules and say, hey, guys,
yeah, let's do this instead. Either you play it the way I do or not at all. Right. Yeah,
I'm leaving. Okay.
Anytime you sit at somebody else's table, you've got to be willing to accept the rules that they're playing at that table. You know, you don't show up as, I don't go to your house for dinner and tell you how to cook it when I get there.
Yeah, that's fair.
You know, it doesn't work that way.
So, it's a great idea, just the whole topic of the aesthetic of a game. I mean, I guess what we've come up with is it really doesn't make or break it for any of us, but it dramatically enhances it if it meets some of those standards that we think are important.
Yes, it will easily take it from a game that I'm obsessed with playing to a game that, let's play it this weekend or... we played that the last couple of weekends. Let's do something else this weekend. Yeah.
I think every one of us at the table would agree that we've played great games with poor aesthetic because the game worked, the scenario was good, whatever worked out great.
Yeah.
And we played mediocre games on pretty tables.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it doesn't make or break it, but it is, it is miniature wargaming after all. It's the reason you do this and not, it's not chess.
It's why you play with miniatures and not counters.
That's right. All right, we are over time, but that's good because it was a good discussion. Thank you once again for tuning in. Remember to look for us, our webpage, anythingbutaone, all spelled out, .buzzsprout.com. You can click on the link to buy us a beer and help support the podcast if you like. But most importantly, share, rate us on all the podcast apps that you can find us on, which are pretty much all of them at this point in time. Once again, for Ray Winstead, Richard Martinez, I'm Tom Castaños. We'll see you back in 2 weeks. Have a great day.
This has been Anything But a One, Adventures in Miniature Wargaming. Find us on all your favorite podcast apps or on our webpage at anythingbutaone.buzzsprout.com. Please subscribe to the show and rate us 5 stars. And of course, tell your friends. See you next time.